Get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be contented to charm the birds off the trees? Just disappear. I care for you much too much. And when you are near, so close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet, but darling, it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of town. Get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be contented to charm those birds of the trees? Just disappear, I care for you much too much.
Starting, all attendees are in listen-only mode.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Glida City Council special meeting of April the 8th, 2021. If you all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
United States of America
and to the republic which stands
one nation
under God,
indivisible justice for all,
liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, a roll call.
Councilmember Seves.
Here.
Councilmember Kasdan.
Here.
Councilmember Richards.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Kiriakou.
Here.
Mayor Perotti.
Here. Public forum. Anybody that wishes to speak to anything that's not on our agenda this evening?
If we have any members of the public wishing to speak to items not on the agenda tonight, if you could please use the raise hand icon. And Mayor, just by looking at it now, I do not see anybody registered.
Thank you. Amendments or adjustments, City Manager, Ms. Green.
Madam Mayor, we have no amendments or adjustments to this evening's workshop agenda.
Thank you. Okay, we're ready to get rolling.
Item A1, which is Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department Priority Setting Workshop and Fiscal Year 2021 and 2022 Annual Work Program.
Okay. Mr. Valdez, are you going to start us off?
I am, Madam Mayor, and I just want to make sure you can see the PowerPoint screen I have up.
Okay, yes.
Great. Thank you. Well, good evening, Madam Mayor, or almost about to be good evening. Members of the council. So tonight's item before you is the fiscal year 21-22 annual work program for neighborhood services and public safety. I figured we'd go through the PowerPoint rather than kind of touch on what's in the staff report. A lot of the same information is in both, and I think it's just a little easier to see and visually than to try to follow along in a written document. So with that, I'll begin. All right. So the purpose of the workshop, obviously, is to give the council as well as the public an overview of neighborhood services, what we do, to update the council on existing and future work commitments and progress on both of those, considering existing and potential work projects, and then ultimately discuss and set the work priorities for our department for fiscal year 21-22. So that's the overall goal of today. The agenda obviously this presentation, then we'll move to questions from the City Council. We can also get public comment on the draft plan, have some more council discussion, feedback, direction, and then ultimately with council support, adopt the fiscal year 21-22 work program. So the big picture takeaways that we wanted to make sure were addressed up front is that, as you well know, the public may as well, that neighborhood services kind of covers a fairly broad range of activities and services. Also includes frequent interdepartmental project efforts with Public Works, Planning and Environmental Review, along with the other departments at City Hall. Obviously, the big topic for this year and last year, since March of 2020, Neighborhood Services has and continues to play a very large role in the city's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. This is focused mostly on emergency response, homelessness services coordination, assisting with policies and responses, multi-agency coordination regarding parks and open space, funding assistance to our nonprofits, individuals, and businesses, as well as developing the economic recovery plan in concert with the city manager's office that was adopted, I think, the second meeting of February. The other things we wanted to do is, you know, obviously highlight some of the priority time-sensitive items that council's directed. So we have the Fire Station 10 project, the Goleta Train Depot project, and we included City Hall acquisition just because that was a recent completion and there's still a little bit left to go. We're still looking to put an elevator in at City Hall. So that's not 100% done, but the 90% of the way there by having the building, which unfortunately we haven't been able to use much over the last a year and change. So other big picture takeaways is just the volume of requests that we get through City Assist for services. Most of those actually stay in NSPS, but a fair amount also go to the other departments in City Hall. We did want to point out, we do have a limited capacity right now to take on new projects and new efforts. Will require having to reprioritize. And we put the note here of a two-year catch-up due to the pandemic. Not so much that we're 2 years behind, but the last time you saw a work program was 2 years ago. So we wanted to kind of point that out to you as well as the public. And sadly, as you know, with the departure of our Vito Adamitis and with Dominique, we have two key positions that are vacant. We've had some movement around a little bit to help with that, but we still have two positions that are vacant as of today. Hopefully that'll change in the next month or so with at least one of those positions. Just quickly, the organizational chart, just to kind of see where things stack. Obviously, the director right now is vacant, the full-time director. The principal project manager, which is what I am, I'm serving in the interim director capacity for now. We have a management assistant that's vacant. And then we have a management analyst that is in a trainee position that was filled earlier this year, our parks and rec manager, an emergency services coordinator. And then you'll see some of the topic areas that they each focus on. And we also have a large contract services, which we'll get into on the next page. But really, a lot of that is law enforcement, parking enforcement, the public health items, project consultants and service providers. So that includes, as you might guess, Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office, Santa Barbara County Public Health for our animal control and tobacco prevention programs. The Sheriff's Office provides obviously the law enforcement along with our parking enforcement officer on a contract basis. And then our consultants, run the gamut between engineering, project assistance, planning and entitlements. We have a homeless coordinator that's been on contract since January that's been helping out. And then also affordable housing monitoring contract that we have now, which we'll be transitioning over to planning and environmental review. So that's as of 2021. This is just another kind of specifics of what you saw in the organizational chart. So I won't get too much into it, but I do want to point out, we do have where it says part-time and contract positions. This is the breakdown of our half-time, temporary part-time senior project manager, Ms. Dato, our Monarch Education Coordinator, which has been vacant for at least a year now, I believe, our CERT coordinator, Ms. Rios, who's done a fantastic job, especially with COVID-19 and all the other items that we've asked her to kind of take on in coordination with Michael Barris, and obviously our parking enforcement officer with the sheriff's office on contract. So when we're fully staffed, we're at about 8.5 positions, full-time equivalents, but right now we're a little short. So Councilmember Richards, I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Valdez, I'm sorry to interrupt. I had a real quick question regarding the parking enforcement officer that's contract. Is that part of our contract with the overall contract with their public safety services with the sheriff's department? Okay, it's not a separate contract?
No, that's part of what they call a menu item.
Okay, thank you.
The menu items also include our motors because those are separate and above and beyond the what's considered patrol function of the law enforcement portion of the contract. But thank you for asking.
Thank you.
And then moving on, again, kind of a recap, but the primary responsibilities that you'll see are quite varied. We still serve as the public safety liaison, under the city manager's umbrella, to the sheriff's office, to fire and OEM. Thankfully, our public information officer has kind of taken on the duties of the responses to those calls in the middle of the night or after hours for things that need to be addressed or at least inform the council of what's going on in the city when it reaches to that level. Obviously, the general administration and required services, things that don't really show up, you know, and sound very exciting, but things that need to get done because they're required by statute. The Community Development Block Grant and City Grants Administration, which you're very familiar with, contract administration, so all the different service providers that we have, including the Sheriff's Office, public health consultants, all that, you know, requires the oversight and monitoring of those contracts. Licensing is a big component of neighborhood services in terms of general business licenses, specialty business licenses, and cannabis, just to name a few. Public safety and emergency preparedness efforts, obviously with Mr. Barris, parking enforcement, as we mentioned, parks and recreation efforts in the Parks and Rec division. Economic development, which covers a number of different topics. Affordable housing, we're still helping with that as that transitions to planning and environmental review, but we'll also continue to play a role because some of the affordable housing that was done under the former successor agency, the former redevelopment agency, now successor agency, still requires monitoring reporting to the state, and given the background that we have with it, and especially the project with Sumita Gardens, it's really appropriate for neighborhood services to kind of keep an eye on that and make sure those things are reported accurately. Obviously the CIP projects that we'll talk about a little bit later, assisting on ordinances as they come up. Obviously that's more the domain of the city attorney's office, but as it relates to topics that neighborhood services is involved in, we obviously play a role in those. A number of standing committees and interagency working groups, task groups, whatever the names might be, those are certainly a part of what we do regularly. And then the very vague but very appropriately named special projects. So as things come up that may not fit in the box or may come up due to priority, we kind of lump those into special projects. Litigation cases, things like that, we're always maybe called upon to assist in those. The other one that's big is the emergency operations support planned and unplanned throughout the year. So neighborhood services, along with a lot of our colleagues at the city, are not shy about assisting when there's a major incident, and neighborhood services is often heavily leaned upon to provide support in those roles, and then to serve as a liaison back to the city management as well. This is a very poignant graph about the city assist requests that we've had over the last 2 years. So this goes from March of 2019 to the end of March of 2021. So in that 2 year span, we had almost 6,000 requests came through City Assist. About 3,100 of those were abandoned vehicles, so over half. So that shows you kind of the spike up front. And then 896 related to illegal parking. So once you add those two up, you know, you're looking at roughly a little over 4,000 of the almost 6,000. Two new requests were added in 2020. We started tracking airport flyover noise complaints, as well as inquiries regarding COVID-19. So you can see, you know, some of the items are very small and not often, you know, even show up on the graphs, but some of them, you know, are probably more along the lines of what you would expect to see. For example, city-owned facilities, that's when even people at City Hall request things get fixed at other facilities, so that can happen quite a bit. Public nuisance violations, things like that, graffiti, you can see those show up here. And then another portion of Neighborhood Services is responsible for and participates in the following public bodies or groups. The ad hoc Fire Station 10 Development Committee is primarily Neighborhood Services responsibility, Emergency Preparedness and Public Safety Standing Committee, which was quite busy last year. The Economic Development and Revitalization Standing Committee, which was also very busy last year and will continue to be this year. Grant Funding Review Committee, I believe we have a meeting next Wednesday on that. The Homelessness Issue Standing Committee, actually we have a meeting on that on Monday. And Ordinance Review Standing Committee, I think we have a break from them for a little bit, but we're a little busier earlier this year. Parks and Recreation Commission, we just had a Parks and Rec Commission meeting last night, so that's every other month. South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, that typically meets quarterly with some of the leadership and then monthly with some of the more regular task group members. The successor agency meets usually once a year in December, but there's ongoing work that needs to be done with the county's oversight board that ultimately gives the approvals for the successor agency. We work closely with UCSB and GEM year-round on economic development and on tech companies trying to place them in Goleta and support local entrepreneurs. The Emergency Managers Group, Office of Emergency Management, Isla Vista Safe Task Force with the District Attorney's Office, and the Continuum of Care for Homelessness, all items that NSPS participates in. Public safety-wise, we typically have an annual report that comes to the City Council, monthly public safety reports that, thank you. Sorry, my 4.5-year-old just barged in. Apologies. Working with our sheriff's office and other personnel for special events. Actually, it sounds like we just wrote this for today, but you know, we had Deltopia last weekend. That's an example of an unsanctioned event. And then the big one is really the sheriff's office law enforcement services. It's single-handedly the biggest line item in the city's budget, general fund budget. Regularly interfacing with our chief of police services, our motor traffic unit, community resource deputy, you name it, school resource deputy for day-to-day operations. You know, tracking all the expenses, making sure our motors have what they need to do their jobs efficiently and effectively. Keeping track of all the money that has to go in and come out, invoicing. And then in 18-19, and the reason we place this here is this is still, we're in a fairly recent iteration of the DSSU. The first contract was for fiscal year 18-19, but this is the first longer term contract that we've had. So it started in 19-20 and goes through fiscal year 22-23. And this totally changed how we purchase, it sounds a little awkward to say, purchase law enforcement services, but that's probably the most appropriate description of what the contract attempts to do. The school resource deputy and community resource deputy provide assistance with our homeless task force, neighborhood watch, community trainings, Elwood Mesa safety efforts. And our motor traffic unit, which we're obviously very proud of, focuses on traffic safety, including, you know, Office of Traffic Safety grants and for DUI checkpoints, school safety, all those things that are added patrols that benefit the city at essentially at no cost to the city because they're grant funded. So all of those things help contribute to the safety of the residents of Goleta, and we're very proud of that. In terms of emergency services and preparedness, we do have an emergency services coordinator who's the lead on disaster preparedness, but the entire department is trained to work in emergency operations. That's required under the emergency management portions of our duties, obviously. Disaster preparedness requires, you know, the whole community to become involved, and our NSPS staff really tries to engage in multiple committees, try to get out there in the community. The Wear and Prepare Initiative, Operational Areas Managers Committee, that's more of a high level function. The CERT committees, working with Southern California Edison in terms of emergency planning. And then maintaining the relationships that really matter, which are our local partners with our surrounding cities, the county, obviously, Office of Emergency Management, the university, County Public Health, Listos, Fire Services, all the training, local nonprofits, and more that kind of help round out the picture for emergency services and preparedness. You know, obviously the city can't do it alone, but we try to play our role to ensure that that happens and is efficiently done. I'll just briefly touch on some of these things, because one of the things that's really hard to describe in terms of emergency services is what that really means. It's kind of a broad term. Really the role of emergency services coordinator is before disaster. What they do is, you know, a lot of the planning and preparing, getting things set up, you know, making sure the city has the right equipment that it may need in terms of responding to an emergency. And obviously the second part, which is obviously sometimes takes longer, is the recovery. CERT plays a huge role in that, being in compliance with all the state standards and federal standards to be eligible to recover money in terms of reimbursement. Community engagement. We've had a very, very long and successful track record with attracting members of the public to engage in CERT and to really be interested in emergency preparedness. I'm not quite sure we see that same level in surrounding communities, but if that's the case, even better. You know, the more everyone is prepared, the better everyone else is as well. During the disaster, the coordinator serves as the liaison for the city and connects organizations to each other with resources, serves as the coach. You know, there's a lot of things that go into emergency preparedness. So part of it is the mindset and helping to do drills to kind of take the edge off people so that they can kind of familiarize themselves with what could happen, what to expect, to know that, you know, stress can and will happen, but there's ways to try to cope with them. And then, the you know, like I said, one of the biggest roles is after the disaster has subsided, you know, assisting in attaining those recovery dollars, those reimbursement dollars, you know, doing the after action reports to develop lessons learned. What can we do better for the next time? Hopefully there's not a next time, but they can and do happen. So this is mostly for the public, but just a small reminder to the council. CDBG, one of our kind of pound for pound programs that delivers a lot of service with almost a fairly small amount of money. I don't want to dismiss the amount of money, but what it can do in terms of leveraging and helping other services providers as they stack their funding to deliver to the community, it plays a huge role. It's obviously a federally funded program through the Housing and Urban Development Division of the federal government, but mostly it helps provide services and programs through contracts. We can do that a number of different ways. For 2021, we had 3 grant recipients because the direction was to go in larger grant amounts, so in excess of $10,000, rather than doing a number of really small ones. On-site and remote monitoring obviously needs to take place to make sure the service delivery is taking place. Tracking of sub-recipient progress to make sure that they're meeting what they've targeted in their submissions. And then processing payments through our finance department to ensure those service providers get what they need in terms of funding. There's a second component to it, which is the capital projects. And so management of capital projects in Old Town, Neighborhood Services, and Public Safety has worked on those in the past. Obviously, CDBG is targeted on a census tract driven basis. So it's targeted to certain parts, mainly to Old Town in the city of Goleta, for the purposes of serving lower income populations. Another big portion of it is the administration, which is kind of why we mentioned earlier about, you know, we typically do larger amounts in terms of agreements with providers. There's a lot of reporting required for this program. It has its own computer system through the federal government called IDIS. So we have to do a lot of oversight reporting, processing of all the program and project HUD audits, monthly reimbursement processes, quarterly and semi-annual reports to HUD, preparation of an annual action plan, the consolidated annual performance and evaluation report, just basically a lot of reports and a lot of monitoring that tends to happen throughout the year. A big one that just recently got completed was the preparation of the five-year consolidated plan, which guides kind of the overall direction of the CDBG program in our community. The analysis of impediments to fair housing, coordination of standing grant funding review committee as well. So we try to parallel those tracks to be efficient and to make sure we don't kind of have double duty with some of our service providers. The Goleta City Grant, this is coordinated through our standing grant funding review committee. They review, in 2021, they reviewed 40 applications for the 21-22 program for $100,000 worth of general fund dollars, recommendation of funding amounts and awards to the applicants. We parallel that obviously with CDBG so that when it comes to council, the council is aware of both. Assessment of program successes throughout the year collected by, you know, reporting, and then continued development and implementation of electronic system. So we did this, I think it was 2 years ago, for application submission and rating. So it's helped cut a lot of the effort down, both for staff as well as for those nonprofits submitting. So instead of having tons of paper flowing around everywhere, it's nicely indexed electronically, and it's easy to view, it's easy to navigate. Economic development, this is kind of a partial list. So I've mentioned previously the successor agency administration that will continue to go forward for the foreseeable future. Ombudsman role with new businesses, site selectors, realtors. So we have a very good relationship with the major brokerage houses in Santa Barbara and in Ventura County in terms of trying to get people to come up to Goleta. Coordinating with the Santa Barbara South Coast Chamber of Commerce. In the past, we've done the biennial Techtopia event, GEM, which we mentioned earlier, Old Town improvements related to parking. We try to work with our public work folks to improve that as we can. The Old Town Business Committee liaison, contract administration and finance liaison, mostly falls in economic development in terms of for the whole department. The banner program, again, the affordable housing, which is transitioning to planning, and then acquisition of real property. So that's been something that NSPS has done over the years. This includes City Hall, you know, the parking lot in Old Town, any number of things that come up, including the Matilda parcels as well. Parks and Recreation, the biggest thing for us right now is the implementation of the rec needs assessment, which indicates approximately $20 million in potential projects over the course of the next 20 years. The major CIP projects that Neighborhood Services is working on right now include the playground renovations at Winchester 1 and 2, Andamar, Berkeley Parks. You can see here the Parks Master Plan implementation. A big one for next year is the community garden and Ermitos Park improvements. The splash pad and other improvements at Johnny D. Wallace in conjunction with Public Works as they finish the bike path in that area. And then the Matilda Park renovation as well. That was just a partial list. We have a very long list that wasn't in the bulleted points. So one of the things we wanted to point out is we do obviously do a lot of our work in collaboration with Public Works. And so you'll see here the Evergreen and SoGrow Park projects, which will probably be expanded now to be more comprehensive. Evaluation and improvements for accessibility and playgrounds at Santa Barbara Shores and San Miguel Parks. And then the other items are more related to programs or other activities. Obviously the Parks and Rec Commission, the Monarch Moves program, which is has actually gone fairly well in the past, given the unfortunate decline in the population of the monarchs coming to Goleta, but it still serves as an educational route for our local schools. Development of the community garden policies and procedures, special event permit process revisions, which I think just finished, I believe in January or February with the ordinance committee. special event permit and pyrotechnic processing, as well as grants. And our Parks and Recs division has been very successful in securing grants, and we hope to continue to do that to lighten the load for the city's actual funds that would probably need to be tapped if we didn't have the kind of grants that we have coming in. So major accomplishments over the last 2 years, just as we mentioned earlier, this was the 2 year catch up. City Hall purchase completed fall of 2019. The transferring over of City Assist to NSPS happened in November of 2019. Completed the emergency operation plan update in October of 2019, and that needs to be updated every 2 years. So we'll be coming back to council before October to do a update to that. Completed the renovation of the Goleta Valley Community Center field. That was in the fall of 2019. Council adopted the Goleta Parks Facilities and Playgrounds Master Plan in January of last year. In the spring, so we finished the issuance in March, but closed all the documents for the refinancing of the former redevelopment agency's tax allocation bonds. That was in the spring of 2020, providing a fairly large saving to all the tax entities, including the city of Goleta. We put the spring of 2020, the financing of City Hall with iBank, that's when we went out to actually pitch our case to get the funding. But ultimately, I think the funding closed, I believe, later in the year, so probably closer to fall of 2020. But that was when we actually got the okay from the iBank board in, when we flew up to Sacramento. Completed an update to the city's municipal code for emergency organization and coordination of emergency functions. That was in May of last year. And then essentially for fiscal year 2021, we got the conceptual design of the Goleta Community Garden approved. Train design theme was selected in August of last year, the traditional theme. California Coastal Commission approved the city's coastal development permit for Fire Station 10 in September. Conceptual designs for the splash pad were approved in October of last year. Thankfully, we finished our litigation and ended up with a settlement for the Winslow affordable units, and we were able to close all 12 remaining units before the end of 2020. Earlier this year, COVID-19 economic recovery plan was adopted by the council. We assisted with adjustments to the Goleta Municipal Code for special event permit processing. Installation of new playgrounds for fitness equipment in four city parks. The bids just concluded this past month. That's well on its way. We completed the homelessness strategic plan in March. Council will be considering this at its April 20th meeting, considering adoption. And then COVID-19 related efforts, obviously, since March. Mentioned those before, but again, we wanted to highlight them in this kind of table fashion. Current ongoing efforts. Not going to read every single one of these, but in general, we just wanted to make the point that there's a lot that kind of comes in under all of these general topic areas. And hopefully these tables help to summarize those for the council and for the public. General administrative and required services is just, the things that just need to get done and have to get done. For the most part, it's about a little over 1.5 FTEs. And this cuts across all of our time. So it's not one person's time. It's just kind of the amalgamation across everyone's time that commits to this work effort. Public safety, about 2.46 persons. A lot of that obviously has to do with the fire station and then parking enforcement, which we mentioned already is under contract. Emergency preparedness efforts, it's about 1.2 FTEs. On the grant side of things, it's about 1.3. Economic development is about 1.8. And part of that is, As certain parts of CIP projects fall under economic development or personnel that's working in economic development, that's how we get to that 1.8 total. Committees, you'll see there the list is fairly long, and we've covered those before. Parks and Recreation again, and that number may be a little bit low, but I think we try to do a fairly conservative assessment of how much time we actually need. Other duties, all the things that is probably common to every other department that comes up, miscellaneous topics, translations, interviews, press releases, coordinating with our public information officer, special projects with the city manager's office or the city attorney's office, depositions, those kind of things that tend to happen, hopefully not with too much frequency, but they do. And then being, representing the city at regional and local boards or committees or task groups. So overall, we conservatively estimate that our department is probably around 10 and a half people in terms of need to do the jobs very, very well and comfortably. But we only have about 8.5 when we're fully staffed. So we kind of feel like we're roughly behind about two people. We've definitely risen to the challenge over the years, and obviously last year was quite a big one, and continues to be this year. So that's kind of the current ongoing work efforts, projects, and programs. And then we just wanted to put kind of the dollar amounts of some of the CIP items. I won't go through all of these since they're in your packet, but essentially, the city's CIP program is very large, and NSPS has 15 of those projects totaling about $54 million. And as you can see here, pretty much all of them are moving forward in some form or fashion. The Evergreen Park multipurpose field is slated to be combined with another Evergreen project. So hopefully have one project that'll be coming to council. And the only other two that have really been delayed are the public swimming pool and the recreation center gymnasium. And just largely one, I probably first and foremost is we just don't have sites identified for them. And then two, they're essentially unfunded. They're big ticket items, but everything else, we're plugging away. Some of the projects are obviously much smaller in the, $180,000 to $200,000 range, but then you have some that are, millions, and then some that are in the tens of millions. So hopefully this gives you a pretty good grasp of kind of the number and the impact of these capital improvement projects that we are responsible for. Existing requests for fiscal year 2021, as I said, we do the support to other agencies as well. In 2021, that totaled about $588,000. So if you net out $7,000 for COAST, which was administered through Public Works, you're still at around $581,000. You'll see a breakdown here of the major topic areas: homelessness initiatives, economic development, marketing, promotion. For example, this past year, that was actually shifted to provide COVID-19 individual assistance of about $100,000 and an additional business assistance of about $66,500. You have your governmental agency agreements, Goleta Union School District and Santa Barbara Union School District. And then the big portion of it is actually our city facilities, recreational facilities and other. So this covers, as you might guess, the Foundation for Gersh Park, the Historical Society, South Coast Railroad Museum and others. Existing requests for fiscal year 2021, we had the Homelessness Strategic Plan, which we completed earlier this year, and now we'll be going to council for adoption. We'll be working on the update of the 2009 Economic Development Strategic Plan, consideration of the joint use agreements with school districts for recreation, the establishment of an off-leash dog area. Some of these have showed up for a year or two. Depending on what's happened during the year, things get shifted and priorities change. We obviously have the establishment of the council priorities for the Parks Master Plan as a seminal issue that we want to address and continue to work on. And then the implementation of new parking restrictions. We kind of put that on pause with COVID, with so many people staying home. We really didn't want to be pushing for a heavy-handed approach to folks that really can't go anywhere. So that will probably resurrect itself as public health orders change and as we regroup and get back to the office probably. Upcoming efforts and potential new work. You'll see here, we just put essentially that list that was on the other slide with a couple of more with some estimated completion dates and then kind of what we think as staff impacts. Thankfully, we'll be coordinating with the city manager's department on the update to the Economic Development Strategic Plan, given that we're a little shorthanded as it is right now. Continuing COVID-19, we don't know how this is ultimately going to pan out. Obviously, we're seeing much more positive, upbeat attitude towards COVID-19, given the vaccination efforts that have taken place. But obviously, there's always a worry that that could regress and that we could slip back into a problematic position. Implementation of the homelessness strategic plan, that's obviously a big one for 21-22. A concept for parklet improvements or developments at the Goleta Valley Community Center. That was a fairly recent one that came up, so we didn't want to put any kind of estimated completion or staff time that would be involved. We're still trying to figure out what that would entail. The Adopt a Park program, we're looking to get some support for a position to help with that. It's something that we've seen and has brought up a number of times with our Parks and Rec Commission. Complete the special event permitting process. Hopefully that'll be done this summer. Continue to explore, an alternative bus depot location for the Goleta Union School District site. That's been a tough one to square just in terms of land value and availability, but we'll still keep pushing on that. The off-leash dog park issue or desire. And then the big one that we put here is, we're not volunteering for this, obviously, right now tonight, but the potential oversight, management, administration of Goleta Valley Community Center's operations. If that were to go down, if we were to go down that road, it could possibly come to neighborhood services, and not sure exactly how much of that would be required to take that on. We thought at minimum it would at least have one person that to be dedicated towards that effort. The Old Town visioning process, which we had hoped to kick off last year, just really didn't lend itself given the environment, but that's a multi-departmental effort that's definitely been on our radar. We see ourselves having a role in that, obviously, down in Old Town and for economic development. So when you add those up, that's about another 1.7 staff. Now that deficit gets even bigger. But with that, we did want to kind of close with our recommendations for 21-22, if that's okay with the council. And the biggest one, and I hate to sound boring and repetitive and redundant, but is, maintaining that existing operational requirements and duties. It's really hard to codify what that really entails, because I think every department has that. And because it's not a new topic or a new initiative, I think sometimes that gets a little bit lost, but it still needs to get done. The rest of them are obviously things that you've seen, which we continue to work on, one for grant purposes in terms of funding, but also kind of the direction and the momentum we have on those items. I'm not going to read through all of them. You have them before you, but we've talked about them, and we really think that this is, from our department standpoint, what we really think would be the most appropriate direction for our work efforts for next year. But obviously, we're here to get that from the council. And with that, we're open to speak on what we presented tonight and anything else the council wishes to have us entertain. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. Council, questions? Councilmember Richards?
Thank you. Well, I want to first start by acknowledging all the great work that your department has done. This is something that we've seen in other departments that we've gone through already. And in particular, Mr. Valdez, I just want to take this opportunity to acknowledge you for stepping in to serving, as the interim director in the absence of our former Vito Adamaitis. So thank you very much. I know, it's been a very difficult year for a challenging year for all of us. And in particular, I want to just thank you and acknowledge you for taking this on. So thank you very much. One question that I had with regard to that last slide, actually, number 32 with staff recommendations. Is this what, previously there was another list of potential projects. And so I just want to understand, is this what that slide 32, your recommendation, does that include the items that are on that other list of potential projects? Is that, are you saying that that staff, you know, your recommendation would be to prioritize those things on slide 32? And I'm just wondering, you know, if that means that you don't feel like you have the bandwidth to tackle those other items that are on that other slide.
I think in any event, I mean, we would love to be able to say we could deliver all of them, but the reality is, especially right now, where when you have six FTEs and you only have four left right now, I mean, we're operating at a 33% reduction of those full-time equivalents for actual employees of the city, not including the contract or the interns and those kind of things. We just want to underscore that that maintain existing operational requirements and duties, it's really hard to quantify that in a way that you know, kind of gives it its due and its importance. And so we don't want to overcommit ourselves. We don't want to say that we can take on, you know, everything and then, you know, just sorely disappoint everyone, including ourselves. And so we've really tried to take a measured approach in what we think we can do for 21-22. Obviously, if the council wants us to focus on other items, absolutely. But these are kind of things that either been on the books for a while, and like anything, it'd be nice to kind of, you know, check the list off those and move on to other ones. But it's really hard when you're incrementally working on a number of different priorities. You know, if you have 10 of them, it's hard to push in 10 different directions. If you have five, it's a little easier to focus and kind of gain momentum in those. But obviously we know we don't have the luxury of, you know, putting things, delaying things for a long time. So, you know, we keep trying to push and move, but at the end of the day, this was our list of what we thought was a recommendation for council to consider, but obviously we're here to take direction from you.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. That's all for now.
Councilmember Kasdan.
Hi. Yeah, also let me second what Councilmember Richard said as far as your stepping in, and I recognize the burden you guys are under right now in terms of reduced FTEs coupled with the challenges of both homelessness and with economic development slash recovery. It's a big boost or a big increase in workload coupled with a reduction in personnel. So I'm sure it's been a huge challenge for you. So good work. Having said that, I guess I was a couple of things. So first, the list you have here, I don't think it doesn't include the special events permits. Is that more or less an oversight that's also assumed to be programmed in?
Yeah, we look at that as under the maintain existing operational requirements because the ordinance committee's already opined on that. And, you know, we kind of look at it hopefully as a formality that comes back to the council. But we see that as obviously we have special events and they need to be addressed year in, year out. Obviously, we had a lot less last year, but in upcoming years, we expect the volume to increase again. So we would place that under the maintain existing operational requirements and duties.
Okay, because I thought the others haven't seen it, but I thought it's a good ordinance to push through. Another one sort of along those same lines was the Old Town Visioning. It seems like that's, you know, rolled into a bunch of other departments and stuff. And as such, it's sort of, you know, kind of outside your discretion in a way, because it's the whole city, all the departments are making the choice. Is that also one that you think should be included in the maintain, or is it one that the other departments?
Absolutely, Councilmember Kasdan. It kind of goes in line with kind of like when we have a DIF study that's prepared under finance. I mean, we don't really take that on as our effort, but we obviously have to contribute and have to be involved. And everybody else in City Hall does as well. But we obviously see like that's something that has to get done, right? I mean, we have to have these fee studies done in order to make sure the city's on firm financial footing. So, you know, we didn't want to put everything under here. And so a lot of what we're trying to say is a lot is actually under that maintain existing operational requirements without having to relist everything again.
Okay. And one other item to ask, I wanted to ask you about, it's the proposed Adopt a Park program and whether that can be pursued separately or independently from the hiring of a position. Because I wonder, at least when I think of, I assume this is something along the lines of what the library has with the Friends or something related, where it's a fund, where the aim is to sort of enable us to fundraise. Is that correct?
That's partially my understanding. I'd feel more comfortable having Ms. Joanne Plummer answer that question, just because I didn't really know much about it until about a month ago. So I'll just be honest about it.
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Valdez. Councilmember Kasdan, members of the council, the Adopt a Park program is designed to recruit and secure volunteers that would be going into our parks, maybe on a monthly or a quarterly basis, choosing a park and adopting that park, and they come in and take care of this park. We have already presented this information to the Parks and Recreation Commission and with overwhelming support. But as we analyze our resources, we need help because these volunteers need support and help when they're out in our parks. They need somebody that they can call on a Saturday morning or a Sunday afternoon that can get them more trash bags and things like that. So we really need the boots on the ground kind of support with this, and that's in our budget request. Right now, we've been piloting the program with a fantastic Rotary Club here in Goleta, and they've been doing Johnny D. Wallace Park since before COVID hit. They took a little break during the stay-at-home orders, but they are back and they are working, and once a month, they go out to Johnny D. Wallace Neighborhood Park, and it's been working so well that we wanted to really bring it and launch it as a real program. But again, in neighborhood services and public safety, as well as public works, we just don't currently have the resource, and we want to make sure that it's successful and that the volunteers have things to do and it can be appropriate. So it is not a fundraising effort. It is an effort to reduce some of the impacts and to really allow our volunteers to have ownership of our parks and to really take care of our parks with us. So a partnership with our community.
Okay, that's different than I was like. But I was imagining if it's a Friends of, it's something we can help start up and then be hands off. But in this case, I can see where you would need an ongoing support. All right, I guess the last thing then, I guess along the same lines, when I was asking this question, and thank you for that answer, that explained it well. But are there any of the things that you were looking at that, you know, some sort of consultant could solve in a short thing if we hired for any of the items that you that are, might be a priority that might help with that we fund something in the ad hoc basis, a la carte.
What was that for a specific topic?
I don't, originally I was thinking of it in terms of the Adopt a Park, but I had a misunderstanding about what that was, the meaning of it. And never mind. I'll look and see if I see anything. I guess actually one last question. The abandoned vehicles that you have there, is that something, if we were adding something to your list, and I know I'm not arguing that it should be put to the top of the list, but it was such a massive amount of public requests and hence an ongoing workload for you guys. Would it make sense? I mean, is there something in our ordinance or something in that we could fix? If we stepped back and looked at our ordinance, could we make it so there it reduces in some fashion or another the numbers of calls and the amount of work you have to deal with on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, actually, have you there is. Thought about it? Yeah, there is. And we had started working on that, I think might have been the end of 2019 or maybe earlier, but looking at an ordinance that would kind of essentially be based on minimum distance that you would move a vehicle? Because essentially what we had happening was, you know, for example, my neighbor parked somewhere and then they just move it 2 feet and then they have to get tagged again and it turned into this big game. I don't want to dismiss the number of calls that we get for that, but there are a number of people that do complain in the order of tens of times or hundreds of times per year. And so that number, in my mind, it's not that it's not correct in the number of people that the number of complaints we're getting, but it but really, I think, reflects a limited number of people. And I don't, when you see that number, I think it kind of scares most people or at least gets them taken aback. But you see a lot of those calls happening in Old Town where parking is at a premium and somebody may not like not having, you know, the parking in front of their home available when they get home. And so, you know, they know the vehicle's not abandoned, but they know that that will respond if there's a complaint that's there. So the other flip side would be to change how we enforce that. And then, you know, not to get into this, you know, in depth, but, you know, there's trade-offs when you do that too, because then if you actually do live there and you have to move your vehicle 100 feet, because that's what the ordinance says, you know, that's a very big inconvenience if you still have to walk to your home when it's 100 feet away. Imagine you're carrying groceries or small children. That's what's come up in some of the discussions. And I believe Councilmember Savitz was parts of that. But that seems to be the only way, because right now, essentially, the restraints we have are you move it, you know, a foot or whatever, and the clock restarts. And it kind of becomes, you know, a drain of resources.
I guess what I'm, if there is a potential fix, if there's a huge workload that we're dealing with on an ongoing basis, and we could go back and sort of do an investment of in an ordinance that would reduce that burden, I would think that's a wise investment. And just, I'm not saying it goes to the top of the list or anything like that, but I think we want to have it on the list just as an efficiency item.
Sure, we can make sure to include that. You know, I guess that always kind of comes back top of mind, because as part of that maintain existing operational requirements, maybe it's enhanced that one portion of it, because maintaining, you know, thousands of calls for service on that one particular item, you know, is a huge drain. But duly noted. Noted.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Carriaco.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and I just want to join with all my other colleagues and, you know, thank you, Mr. Valdez, and thank the rest of the staff who have been contributing to the efforts of this department. I mean, if you really think about it, this is a department of roughly 8.5 FTE equivalent, doing the work of what in a larger city or entity would be the work of 6 or 7 different departments. It's a really big job. It's a really small crew, and you're doing a lot with a little. So I just want to, you know, say thank you for your efforts, you know, stepping into the interim role, and, you know, everyone that you've got working there in partnership with you. I want to kind of go back to something that Councilmember Richards was starting to explore with you, and it's sort of the difference between the proposed projects and the recommended projects for the current year. Not that the staff recommendations taken in total aren't a lot of work and easily 8.5 FTE equivalent worth of work, but I want to try and just get underneath a little bit more. What would, in your opinion, what level of staffing would we really need to actually go beyond kind of the status quo list to get to some of the things that have been either waiting for a while, like the issue with the school district and the yard, or some of the newer emergent projects, such as the you know, changes at the community center. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, our job is policy and providing you with the resources to do your job effectively. And so I guess what I'm trying to do right now is to try and get as close to a clear answer as I can on what resources do you feel you need as we start to move into the budget workshops to be able to do not just what you're recommending, but what we're asking for? Now, I know that's a hard question to answer. So take your time
with it. I see Ms. Green's hand up.
I had a feeling she might jump in.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, council members, I do want to note, as I have in previous work program workshops, that neighborhood services, along with some of the others, have put in requests for additional personnel, which are being carefully evaluated, and we're preparing recommendations to council for when we come to you with the operating budgets, which is going to be April 27th. So we'll have more information about what the departments actually requested in that meeting. So just wanted to give you a reminder about that. And then, of course, it'll include the costs and all that.
Thank you.
And first of all, I just wanted to say, and I was remiss in doing so, I got a little nervous and started talking too fast, but I should have said, obviously, thank you so much to the department. That's been incredible. Obviously, when Vito was here and then subsequently to his departure, it's been really inspiring to see how tight the group has gotten and supported each other and, pulling the hours, not, complaining, not, fretting or saying, that's not really my role. It just really hasn't been the way it's been in neighborhood services ever, and even less now. So I did want to take a moment to thank everyone in our department. Obviously, I'm presenting tonight, but I am just one piece of that puzzle, and I don't in any way want to take away from the accomplishments and the dedication of the other staff members. So I just want to make that very clear up front. So thank you to them. Secondly, to your question, Mayor Pro Tem Kiriakou, the tough question, and City Manager Green addressed a good portion of it, is, some of these items aren't really well defined yet. So it's really hard to know what that's going to be in terms of a work effort, right? Some of these projects still haven't been fully designed or what's going to be involved. I mean, they're ideas in some manners, and some of them are more developed than others. But, part of it is, we've been in this, at least for this last year and for a while now, just kind of reacting to things. And as things change, we roll up our sleeves and get into them. So it's really hard to kind of, peek your head up, look around and see, okay, what else are we doing? What else do we need to be doing? And we try to do that, as often as possible. But as things change, one of the things with the implementation of the Homeless Strategic Plan, that was a big thing to complete the plan. But it's a bigger thing to try to execute it. And then that's going to be, well, how much are we going to do? How much are we going to bite off at the beginning and then in later years? So, I hate to give you a vague answer, but it really depends, on the level and priority of the commitment to really answer that question. I think it just depends year to year as things come up. I'm sorry I don't have a better answer for you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Valdez.
Any other questions? Councilmember Seves?
Yeah, I wish we had the same feature that the public has, a raise your hand feature.
Zoom, so yeah.
See on the screen who's asking to speak. Just a couple of questions. First comment, Mr. Valdez, dealing with the Adopt a Park program. We had the discussion, I think we were talking about either Kellogg or John D. Wallace Park, about the possibility of staging different segments, but having donations made to cover the expenses, and then we'd identify, who donated the money. It's similar with the Friends of the Library do, and getting stuff done at the library. I know that my Elks Lodge bought the train, the new train operation there for the kids, and they put a real nice little plaque on it for recognizing the donation. And it was money that didn't come from the city and money that didn't come from the Friends. But it was a way of the, at least in the Elks Lodge, be able to participate in helping the library. The list you have here, my first question is it prioritized? Secondly, is this reasonable expectation that you're going to complete these in 21-22? If the part of that question, if not, then shouldn't we have on this list what you theoretically figured that think that we can do with budget and staffing so that we can present a true work program that makes sense, expecting the completions in 21-22.
To answer your first question, Councilmember Esteves, I wasn't sure what you meant, if you were talking about adopt a park or if you were talking about a dog park or...
No, adopt a park. Adopt a park.
Okay.
Ms. Plummer said it was getting volunteers, but I recall that the council discussion was actually getting people to donate to fund different segments of the projects that need to be done.
I don't know if Ms. Plummer is on the line, but she may want to give a response. But I think part of what we heard last night at Parks and Rec Commission was I think something along the lines that you spoke of, which is, you know, are there things that we can do to have people sponsor things? You know, kind of like when you have a commemorative bench and people donate money, there's a little plaque there, and then, you know, the money goes to pay for the bench. And, you know, that was brought up in terms of interpretive signs for the project at the community garden last night. And I think that's something that a lot of cities are looking at to say, how can we, you know, kind of dedicate revenue that people want to donate to for specific purposes? And I think that's, we have that already with the donation form to the city, where folks can say, I want to give, you know, $500, but I only want it directed at this. So we've had that in the past with equipment that's been donated to the city. But I'll let Joanne talk about the Adopt a Park program and then in a second, and then I'll just quickly try to answer your second question, which is this list prioritized? It is and it isn't. The Fire Station 10 and Goleta Train Depot aren't something that we're going to finish in 1 year. I mean, they're CIP projects, they're kind of long-term projects, but they're kind of top of mind, especially the Train Depot, given the funding that requirements that we have to complete that. You know, establishment of council priorities, I think we can establish them, but I don't think we're going to be able to do all of them in a year. I think so that's doable. The update of the Economic Development Strategic Plan, I believe we can do that in fiscal year 21-22. We can start implementing the Homeless Strategic Plan, but that's going to be a long-term effort. So some of these topics kind of lend themselves to being able to be completed on, but a lot of them lend themselves to be worked on, for lack of a better term. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I'll let Ms. Plummer answer your
You kind of answered it, but what I was really looking for, Mr. Valdez, is more of a measured outcomes. What can we expect in 21-22 from this work program, instead of just carrying things over and over and over every year, because one, we didn't do any work on it, or two, it was more than we can deal with. I think if we had a measured outcome, so we know that Fire Station 10 and 21-22, this is what our expectations are, so that we evaluate the department, we see that we're meeting the goals that staff and council agreed on as far as the measured expectations of completions. Does that make sense?
That certainly makes sense. And I think as part of the CIP presentation, we do have the timelines will be included in there in terms of rough estimates of time. It may not be exact, it may be like spring of whatever year or fall, because things can shift. But I hear what you're saying. And I think that makes a lot of sense. We kind of look at these as we got to go on them, regardless of if we think we're going to be at a certain point X or a certain point Y. But I understand from your perspective, you're not seeing a estimated completion date or what stage it'll be at what point. So, no, I appreciate that. And like I said, some of the other ones, like, you know, the Matilda parcel acquisitions, it's really dependent upon if there's a willing seller, if those things kind of come up. When they do, we bring them to council in closed session. But again, it's the one thing about the work plan is it's a general guide, but it, you know, as soon as we mint that thing, you know, things can change the next day depending on what arrives. And so that's the difficulty in trying to project out right now in April what we're going to be doing, you know, next April. But, you know, we're doing the best we can with what we got.
And I appreciate that, because when we get into the budget process and we looked at measured estimates as far as accomplishments, we tie that to the budget, because if we got a project going that's not going to be finished, or we haven't spent any money on it, our finance director is going to come back and say, well, you didn't need it. We're taking it. We got to put it somewhere else. So I think that, you know, that's got to always be the back of our mind as far as when we allocate funds and we have an expectation of measured outcomes, then I think it makes better sense to the public as we start spending their money.
And I totally agree with you, Councilmember Aceves. I think it's a little different when you talk about CIP versus the operational side, because the CIP tends to be longer term budgeted and allocations are made and we see what amount is going to be in each fiscal year. It's a little better guide for seeing where that money stands, but you're absolutely right regarding operational budgets, because unless there's a good excuse to roll forward that money, you know, usually you're limited by the fiscal year that you're in.
Yeah.
Councilmember Richards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just have one more question and then also a comment for clarification. My question is, Mr. Valdez, the assumption of what the department can accomplish over the next fiscal year, is that assuming that you're fully staffed, I assume? Is that right? Because right now we're down two positions, the director position, obviously, and then the management assistant position. So is your assumption estimate of what can be accomplished, is that based on a fully staffed, based on what we had already allocated, right?
You know, it is. I don't want to use the term aspirational because we don't want to use that for our department in this case, but we feel like we could get there. We've definitely got there when we had less in certain years and accomplished things that we were actually surprised we pulled off. But this is our strong guess of, you know, our strong recommendation of what we think we can accomplish. Obviously, if we're fully staffed, that seems to be much more in grasp. But even so, you know, we spend a lot of time in the department meetings, you know, going over this list to say, can we do this? You know, is this really going to be feasible? And that's why not everything under the sun is under there. And we really wanted to highlight that first bullet point. So I think it's something we can do. We're going to, you know, bust our butts as hard as we can to get there. But I think if we have the full staff, we can certainly get there. And even if we don't, we're going to try to get there. We just think these are the things that have traditionally been top of mind, especially going forward. And we want to do that. I don't know if Ms. Green has anything else to add, but that's been our suggestion, our recommendation.
Ms. Green?
I just do want to add that these are the recommendations of a very talented professional staff that puts really their heart and soul into these projects. And not only the things on the list, but the things that I call upon them to provide me, they really do support the city manager's office and all the departments. You know, there isn't really a bullet point here that shows how much they contribute organizationally across the city. So I wanted to make note of that and let you know from my perspective how much these employees in neighborhood services contribute and how much I appreciate that. But knowing that this is their professional recommendation, I think it is very well thought out. I think it does show a balance between the day-to-day work, which is very labor intensive. We've automated more of our procedures over the past year because of COVID, but there's still many, many things as a public agency we have to follow through with in our documentation, how we manage contracts, the time it takes to manage consultants. And this group in neighborhood services is very, very good about meeting all their reporting requirements on time, accurately, being on time with their staff reports, keeping up with invoices, and the list goes on and on. So I would say, from my perspective, seeing how well they perform for a number of years and knowing how much behind the scenes kind of back end work there is for the projects they have, for their grant programs, for CDBG, et cetera, that this is a reasonable and appropriate list. And I also really want to thank them for taking the time to put this together and to really have the courage to say, this is what we can do. Here are the other things that are going to have to wait until either there's additional funding, additional staffing, or until we get some of these items checked off the list. Sometimes it does take a lot of guts to be able to tell the city council things like that. So I do feel that this is realistic, and it does reflect what we believe are community and city council priorities, and also some of the things that you have in your strategic plan. So our thought is this is a very comprehensive look and something that we feel staff can really stand behind and deliver in the next year.
Thank you. That.
I'm sorry, I still have some additional things. So, you know, I think one thing I want to mention is that something that will be on my mind as we go in, you know, go past the work plans and look into the budget discussions is how much of what the city needs right now is just to fill its vacant positions versus are we needing to actually add more positions, or do we just need to fill the ones that we've already allocated for, which have been, you know, remaining? We have many positions, as you know, that have been vacant over the last year because of our hiring freeze. And, you know, and I, there's so much we want to do, and, you know, I want us to do, you know, as much as we are able to do. And so something that will be important for us to consider is just that question of, you know, is what we're not, where we fallen behind, or what we've not been able to accomplish, is it because we're just not filling our positions right now, or are there other larger structural deficits that we need to look at? So I'm not sure how to ask for you to present that case, but that will be something that we will need to consider. So I just want to put that out there.
Yes, thank you, Councilmember Richards. You don't have to ask, because we've already been working on that, actually. So we've developed three scenarios in the budget, one that looks at just the restoring the frozen positions, and then a scenario that looks at what we need beyond that, and also looks at not just personnel needs, but supply services and equipment needs as well. So we're preparing to tell you, you know, this is what we need, not just to make up for the cuts that we had to make in the last year, but to also go forward and make progress on the things that are on our respective lists within each department. So you will be seeing that full analysis.
Great, thank you.
And the costs associated with it.
And then finally, Madam Mayor, sorry, I just had one more comment for clarification regarding the parklet, which I think may be new for people, but I wanted to just clarify that this was put forward by myself with the support of Mayor Pro Tem Kiriakou. And the idea for that at the Goleta Valley Community Center was just to look at that little green space in front of the community center, that semicircle, which has the gazebo right in the middle of it. And, you know, this was an area that has been used for movie nights, for some concerts in the park in Old Town, in general, just as a community space. And in my estimate, I feel like it's been underutilized. It was never really designed for how it's been used. And I believe that there's room for improvement, that, you know, we could make some tweaks, perhaps, that would allow for that space to be even better utilized, you know, whether it's park benches or other improvements. And so my thought was that perhaps that discussion could be included into the Old Town visioning process, maybe not necessarily you know, as a separate item, but just as part of a larger discussion about Old Town and the needs of Old Town. So I just wanted to clarify, like, that's where that came from. And I'm looking forward to a robust discussion about the needs of the community center and Old Town as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Carriaco.
Just a comment and then a suggestion. You know, I was thinking about some of the comments that Councilmember Aceves made and a couple of the other council members. You know, it sounds to me like what's happening is we have a council that is really interested in some of the concepts of performance-based budgeting and being able to measure things so that we can effectively manage them, manage our resources, manage people's time, during a time when we have really finite resources and limited staffing. And I have every confidence that that's actually what our staff is doing, you know, behind the scenes, not on camera. The suggestion for the future would be perhaps on some of the major initiatives that our staff are working on, whether it's the fire station, the train depot, or some of these other, you know, significant projects, if we could just have some kind of chart or graphic that just kind of shows that this is 75% complete, and it went from 25 to 75% complete during the year, and these were the two main things that moved it that far, and then this is the thing that's remaining to get us from 75 to 100. That might not only help the council, it might also help the public better understand just what's happening with their money, and then it might give everybody more confidence of, yeah, this should be where we're putting our resources. And just that comment and that suggestion just for the future. Otherwise, I think this has been a really helpful presentation, a lot of information, a very dense presentation. A lot was clearly done, still a lot to do, and just thank you to everybody.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Valdez, I just want to say I echo what my colleagues have said. A lot of my questions have been answered. I have more questions, but I think they're more I'm realizing they're appropriate. They might be more appropriate for when we talk about the budget. But I want to thank you for stepping up and being our interim director, working with a skeleton crew that's getting a lot of things done. And you do have a good crew. You do have a good working group. I miss seeing you upstairs, all working hard. But I thank you. And you've put together a great recommendations, and we'll see what can be accomplished. And I think, Councilmember Richards, you bring up a really interesting point about finding out, can some of these things be accomplished if we had more staffing? Is it the funding? You know, I think that's going to be really worth looking at, because we certainly don't want to burn everybody out and have anybody leave. I know I've said that many times, but I really mean it. you know, especially working from home, it's definitely hard to separate work from your home, because your home is your work. That's where you're working. So, yeah. We have to all be conscious of that. So I'm going to hold off. A lot of my questions were mainly, I think, funding questions that we could, when we get to the budget. But I do have one on GEM. I'm just wondering, where are we at with GEM? It's they don't have a regular a building, but they are going. It's virtual, correct?
Correct. So, just like we're speaking right now, that's kind of what our GEM meetings look like. We went away from a model where we're burning, you know, thousands of dollars a month on rent for a fairly unused building and location. And really what we started pivoting towards was, you know, where is the impact that we could make specifically with companies at an early stage, and then also too in providing resources to them. So rather than paying, you know, $7,000 a month for a space, could that be used differently in terms of supporting teams? The biggest expense that GEM has that each year is the what we call the Summer Accelerator Program. And that's kind of an outgrowth of the university's new venture competition, which I think they have their first event at the end of this month, April 29th. And then again, they have their finals, I think, in May. And so, you know, really we have to be honest, we leverage a lot of the university's activity and their presence in the in the community. And we've been trying to be very judicious with, and that's why Jen didn't ask for additional money this year, and even you know, last year didn't take a $50,000 contribution. It obviously knew that, you know, the cities, the university was hurting for money. And right now it looks like Jim has, you know, a fairly well funded foundation to kind of keep things operating for the next year or so, or at least the next couple of years. But that's where it's at. It's really trying to focus where it invests its money to kind of get the biggest bang for its buck. I know there's been talk about a co-working space that opened up last year at a very, very unfortunate time. And we've been in discussions with them about supporting them, you know, as the public health orders change and as events start to pick up again. So it's a tough thing because a lot of that area focuses on collaboration, and a lot of it tends to happen, ironically, in a non-technical way, which is networking in person, you know, standing in front of a whiteboard and having ideas, things like that. That really it's hard to replicate when you're in on a Zoom call, for example. Yeah. But I did want to get back to a point that Councilmember Richards made about, you know, our recommendations. You know, do we think we can accomplish it? If the council wants to take off half of them, we're more than happy to hear that tonight and would be thrilled. But that's unlikely to happen. But I thought I would just bring a little levity to the discussion here. And then to your point, Mayor Prodi, you know, obviously, I'm appreciative that City Manager Green and Ms. Schmidt actually had the confidence to ask me if I wanted to take this role on. And I've been appreciative for the opportunity and hopefully been doing a good job. And yeah, I mean, there's a reason why I'm back at City Hall. I mean, I love this place and I love neighborhood services. So I'll leave that at that. And then I think Councilmember Kasdan had a question.
Councilmember Kasdan.
Thank you. I guess two things. One is just, I think an observation, it's not really about neighborhood services per se, but I think on the city managers, if I'm right, there was a dashboard sort of thing that was going to show performance measures and progress. Am I recalling you have something like that in forthcoming at?
Yes.
Actually, a couple of people said that.
Councilmember Kasdan and Mayor Council members, we did have a product we were looking at that you can track your progress on performance measures and on your strategic plan, actually, and have it appear on the website. So it's very accessible to the public and staff and council and very transparent about how you're doing. So it's a tool that initially was offered to us at a price that looked really great, but we did then hear from the vendor that the actual cost was going to be more. So that did become an issue over the last year when our revenues declined and we had to really cut back, but it is still one of the items that we'll look into pursuing as soon as, you know, the belt tightening can be relaxed a little bit. But it does appear to me that it's an excellent way to track this data.
Okay. The other thing, this is probably just something to put on the table for when we hit funding, and it goes back to what I was saying before and what Council Member Aceves raised, and that idea was something separate from the Adopt a Park, which is, in other words, something that would be a fundraising sort of opportunity, a Friends of this park or Friends of Goleta Parks or something like that, that would be an opportunity for us to raise money. What I was wondering about is whether consultant report would be something that would tell us. So like Friends of the Library operate on their own. We don't have any role in it. And if there's something that we can do, some sort of plant a seed, if you were, to sort of help establish it, and maybe without using neighborhood services staff, but if there were a, you know, not too expensive consultant report, maybe that could provide that kind of, you know, what it takes to get something like that off the ground. If we think we could raise money, it might be quite But that's something to consider for the funding side of things when we do that. And that's it. Otherwise, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Kiriakou.
Thank you. I'm going to go outside my lane here for a minute and get a little bit micro. You know, all this talk about dashboards, I'm just wondering, has staff been looking at Power BI? Do we have anyone on staff who's trained with that product? Because we can make our own dashboards. Yeah, you know, the technology is out there. If we just get the software and have the training, you know, we could have somebody that, you know, it's their job to curate the data for us and make sure that we have really clear performance measures that are, you know, graphically presented and curated in a really, you know, dynamic and clear fashion.
Madam Mayor, council members, to answer the question, I am not sure if we have anyone with that expertise. We can certainly reach out in our organization and find out. So I know our assistant city manager is listening avidly to this conversation, and we'll make a note of that.
I think that would be something, if we don't have someone in the organization who has that training, if you have someone that has the aptitude and the interest, that would be some good training to get.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Then I think we are looking for, we're not looking for a motion, or are we?
The public.
Public comment?
Public, oh gosh. So hard for me to remember that when I don't see the public. So sorry, please, Deborah Lopez.
Mayor, I've checked, I've been checking, and there aren't any public members registered on this meeting. So no public comment.
Okay, thank you.
Can we take that as we're doing a phenomenal job? Because that's how I take it.
I think so. You should take it that way.
And Madam Mayor, we don't need a formal motion for these work program workshops. We feel that we do have some great input from the City Council tonight and have a good idea of the direction that you would like us to go. We've made a lot of notes and are able to follow up as we continue into the next fiscal year.
Great. All right. Any last remarks? Nope, not seeing any hands raised. Then I think this meeting is adjourned. You're just waving, right? Councilmember Kasdan, you were waving? Yeah, okay. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everyone.